ABC Radio Australia.
Well, ancient stone structures around the world have been fascinating people for centuries, from Stonehenge in England to the huge faces of the Easter Island Moai. Unique to Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands are the Lati stones. Dating back to 1000 AD, these pillars were often arranged in rows and could be up to 3 metres tall. Today, the Lati stones represent the culture and strength of the Chamorro people. And joining me this morning to chat more about them is archaeologist Mike Carson from the University of Guam. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for bringing me on your program. Happy to be here.
Now, you've spent 15 years researching these stones. Can you describe for our listeners what it's like to be up close with them?
Well, yeah, every Lati is unique, and it's like walking into a village, you know, where people live there. Many people today still feel their ancestors are with them when they visit these sites. I should describe what the Lati are when you see them. They are the stone remains of traditional villages of the Chamorro people of the Mariana Islands. So the stone portions include the stone pillars, that was just a single stone carved out from either limestone or in some places from volcanic stone, if that's what's available. And that pillar at one time on top of it was what we call a capital or a tassa stone. And on top of that was the superstructure, say, of the house. So it was raised above the ground. And that superstructure, the architectural term, made of the wood, the thatch, and the other perishable components that no longer exist. So what we see now are the stone components. So the stone pillar that we call the haligi and the capital called the tassa that usually have fallen down. They often are covered in vegetation, sometimes even damaged by tree growth, but that's part of the character of the site, is, you know, being in nature like that. And these are places where people lived. They were houses of various types, some houses for people to live in, other houses for storage of precious or valuable things like family heirlooms and other special items. It's a little unclear what they were. Some were larger meeting houses or houses for people of higher status. So they were larger, right, than the others that were did not need to fit that size. But every one has its own character of design, not only technically in terms of using the raw materials and the engineering, but also artistically in the shape and the design and organization of what they looked like. And even just in those stone remain parts, you still can identify that. So that's generally what it's like first encountering Lati sites in their context.
And as I understand, they could really vary in size. So some of them might be up to 3 meters tall or sometimes as small as a coconut. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's about the right range, accurately. The tallest standing of the Lati is the famous House of Taga site in the island of Tinian. And that was one of many, you know, it was a Lati village. Taga is the name of a traditional chief, like a strong leader or chief who lived there probably during the late 1600s. And this is the largest Lati ever made, was his house, the House of Taga. So it's about 3 meters tall. Some parts of it still are standing, which is remarkable, even after all that has happened since then, and, you know, including World War II and other things that were quite devastating in the area. But very impressive, and is the largest one standing. Most are about a meter tall. Like if you look at the average of, you know, all of the Lati, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. But on average, I would say about 1 meter tall is the expectation if you just have a random Lati site. And others, especially like in the far northern islands that we call the Gani, that are just small volcanic islands, they do not have the large formations of limestone that are ideal for quarrying the large pieces. They have some fossil reefs with smaller amounts of coral that are not the best for quarrying, but typically the volcanic stone is used there. They tend to be very, very small. Some are as mentioned, as you mentioned, not much larger than a coconut, you know, in size. So they're quite small, but using that design was important, and making it of stone was important for the long lasting aspect of the house.
So in terms of the design, it is a special design not seen mm-hmm. anywhere else in the world. With the pillars having an upside down dome, which is placed on top of the pillar, what's the reason for that?
Well, we don't know the reason for it precisely. Many different things have been proposed. We do know that the older houses, like going back in the archaeological record of the Marianas, we have much, much older sites than the Lahti. And those houses, we see the wooden traces of where the wooden posts would have stood. And those go back thousands of years earlier. So there seems to have been a transition from wooden raised posts to the stone. So that's interesting in itself. And that older wooden raised post house seems to have parallels with what you see even currently in some parts of island Southeast Asia. And historically up through the 1900s, you would see in parts of the Philippines, Taiwan, Okinawa, and other places, which is a wooden post raised house. But instead of that like hemispherical half dome on top, it was a wooden disc, so it was hollowed in the middle, and that disc was set slightly lower on the wooden pillar. So you would, and the idea traditionally is these are called rat guards to prevent rats from climbing up the post directly. The rat would need to somehow go around this wooden disc before continuing up the wooden post or the pole up to the house, and that was to protect rice grain storage as well as the living area. Now that seems to be one interesting idea. There's not a direct way of testing to prove or disprove, but it's an interesting idea. And if you think about the transition from using wood to stone, that would mean carving out a complete hole in the middle of the stone, like the stone disc, similar to what you see in the Yapi's money discs in Micronesia, and which is a very large effort for a house, and it may not, like engineering-wise, may not be practical to stand up with a heavy wooden disc at the top like that. So those are some of the ideas. Others are about prevention of falling down of the structure during strong winds, like we have typhoons very often in the region, as well as earthquakes that are very, very common in the Marianas next to the Marianas Trench. And so with those earth movements and wind movements, having something that allows the structure to move with that vibration, yet still, restabilize itself, could be, and some architectural like simulations were done, mostly like computer-wise, with ambiguous results. So that's not yet conclusive, and a number of other ideas as well. So none of them yet 100% provable or disprovable, but all very interesting and giving us so many ideas.
Definitely some very interesting theories there. My guest this morning is the University of Guam's Associate Professor of Archaeology, Mike Carson, and he's speaking with me today about the ancient Lahti stones found in the Northern Mariana Islands. So while they did range in size, the biggest Lahti stones are known as the House of Tucker. So what's the story behind why that one was so large?
Yes, that one, the House of Tucker, associated with the Chief Tucker himself, is said to be an expression of power and strength, and making the largest house would be, like a claim to his status or title in that area. Now, others are quite large, but not really at that scale. And one other Lahti in the nearby island in Rota actually would have been even larger if it were ever completed. And that is in the island of Rota, what we call the Asnevitz Quarry. So it's a limestone terrain where you can see the shapes of the Haligi and the Tasa, those components of the Lahti that were carved out but never removed from the ground. And they would have been larger than the House of Taga even. And so this gives you an idea of some sort of maybe competition, I would say, between who could make the tallest and most impressive of the Lati. And the House of Taga, I should say, is very, very impressive. It was meant to impress people visiting. And the location of it even is on the southern shore of Tinian. So as near like a natural sort of harbor area, but now modified by an artificial harbor. So difficult to ascertain, but the original context would have been the natural harbor. And so anyone visiting the island would see this very tall and impressive structure standing far taller and above the surrounding village around it. And that village around it had at least, it depends on the documentation, but at least 12, maybe more than 15 other Lati houses around it at one time. So very impressive place. And so they're larger and impressive within their village. And then if you compare one village to another, you can see usually one house in that village is the largest and probably some rivalry or competition amongst those villages.
And the last of the Lati stones were built in the 1700s, but they're now a symbol of strength for the Chamorro people. So why is the symbol so important?
Yeah, well, I should clarify, by the year 1700 would be the end of people living in them. So they started around the year 1000 is the oldest like construction date we can give you by radiocarbon of the layer beneath them, and then continued up through the 1600s. And that's because of the legacies of foreign, you know, imperial contacts and relationships that started technically in the year 1521 with Magellan's visit in Guam and the Marianas. But the most intensive contact really was later, you know, after the Spanish galleons started in the later 1500s. Then the Jesuit missionaries made a sort of a bid to go into the Marianas region. So that was like the late decades of the 1600s. But that also brought in Spanish military and governmental aspects as well. And we had the period known as the Spanish Chamorro Wars that we call the Spanish term for it was the reducción, the reduction of the Chamorro population. So people were removed. The survivors, I should say, were removed from most of the islands and reduced into a few villages of Guam, Rota, Tinian, Saipan, and then that even reduced later just to being in Guam. In a few villages that were not necessarily the villages where people lived before. And in that context, by the year 1700, the tradition of living at Lati was gone. You know, people were living in Spanish-controlled villages that were not necessarily their own villages. And the Lati at that point became remembered as ancestral places, you know, places where you visit, if you approach, then you need to ask for permission from the ancestors to make sure they know you're not up to no good around there, and that you're respectful and you listen and follow their advice while you are in their place. So Lati are remembered in that way ever since that time. And now, currently, we have seen the last few decades a very strong resurgence among Chamorro people to learn more about these sites, especially if they're in places of their own families and ancestry, you know, if it's like in a place where their family has a direct connection and people want to learn about them. We see a pretty good movement lately, even in what we call Indigenous Chamorro Organizations, ICO, that is meant to have an Indigenous point of view in protecting and preserving and learning about these sites. So it's not just, you know, a government imposed, you know, preservation plan from the outside.